hello to the lovely people listening. That's right, I'm back for another season. You thought I was gone? Wrong. Let's be honest, I just missed you too much. I'm your host, Cece Odenbaugh, of the Level Up podcast, the ultimate podcast for all things gaming. And today I'm going back. I'm revisiting the episode that I did last season about Dragon Age Veilguard. Now that it officially released back in October on Halloween, and I finally had the time to completely dedicate and immerse myself into the wonders of Thedas, which ended up being a whopping 90.2 hours, according to Steam, playing one and a half run-throughs, one of a mage and the other a rogue, I thought I'd give my very formal and extremely official review. Big spoilers ahead for those who are planning to play it. This is going to be your one and only warning. So I had big hopes for this game. As we all know, I pretty clearly described in the other episode, and I'm here to just give my humble opinion. I have mixed reviews on it. So the first time I played through the Veilguard game, according to Steam, I think I played like 50.7 hours. That's very specific. I say I think, but I have a script in front of me, and I clocked the number, so it was 50.7 hours, whatever that means. Playing all day from like 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. from Saturday to Friday because I'm a freak and I had the time to, and I didn't know how to feel, which probably isn't a good sign, but I really wanted to love it. I wanted it to meet my expectations. I wanted it to meet other fans' expectations. And I don't know if it did. So I created a pros and cons list, right? As you do. Because that's what I wanted to do to really get a grasp. And I'm here to share that lovely list with you all, with y'all. There were definitely some good moments. I don't think I've ever sobbed. Yes, that's right. Sobbed. Thank you very much. At the ending of a game before, at least since Mass Effect 3, which makes sense seeing as they were both developed by BioWare. Anyway, I'm an emotional person and I get invested in stories, which is why I like RPGs so much. Anyways, those good moments, I feel like they, BioWare and Electronic Arts, the developers of the game, did really well. But there were other areas that I just wasn't impressed with, I suppose. But maybe that's because I had such high expectations. But I don't know. I wanted more than what I got, which is what is literally going to be, you'll get the gist of this when I explain. So pro number one, the visuals were actually breathtaking. I feel like this is where the teams really put their hours into because the game is stunning. They cooked and they served a delicious full course meal. I mean, just within the first few bits of the cutscene, my jaw dropped like to the floor. I was just, the way they worked the colors into the game with the bright, vibrant colors of the Arlathan Forest to the dark, somber places like the Haasberg Wetlands, which are two different areas of the game that you can explore. It was all just so beautiful, a masterpiece, truly. It was kind of funny when I first launched up the game after I went into a hole trying to develop my character. The first time I played the game and like the first cutscene, my dad was actually next to me on his computer playing some other game, Subnautica or something like that. And he turned around and he commented on the visuals on my computer. He was like, wow, the visuals look really good. That's a really big plus for me. And then he turned around and played on his game. So maybe the visuals were popping because I got an updated graphics card on my computer for Christmas like 2 years ago. And I usually play older games. So this was the first game that really put the graphics card to the test. But I was just chef's kiss to the graphics. Okay, pro number two. I really liked the customer character or customer customization. I meant character customizations. Going back, not customer characterizations, because what does that mean? Character customizations. You're welcome. So one thing you should know about me, I'm looking back on this and I'm like, maybe I'm kind of a freak. Because I will dedicate 3+ hours to perfecting my character's looks. If the eyelash color isn't right, I restart. If she doesn't look good with that hairstyle, back to the beginning. If I'm going to spend time with this protagonist, right? In my mind, this is my justification. If I'm going to spend my whole week playing with this character, I want her to look cute and like she's the bomb.com. And that's all I'm going to say. I will admit, when I first was playing around with the customization, I was kind of taken aback and a little overwhelmed with just how many options there were, because it's kind of hard to explain, but in Veilguard, you have this weird like triangle morphing three different shapes of heads thing. I don't really know if this is the best way I can describe it, that I've never seen before. And I don't think, I mean, even after fiddling with it and tweaking around with it, I still just didn't, I didn't get it. It was Golem's concept where you can take different head shapes and morph them together into one, and you can like toggle it to be more like a certain I don't know. I didn't get it. It was just, it was weird, but it was cool, but it was weird. Other things that I did like about the customization, because that one wasn't really a pro, but they had a lot of just different options for customization. So for instance, I think they had like 60-ish different like hairstyle options, which was a little overwhelming at first, but did I go through all of them individually? Yes, I did. But those different options grew on me. And they had that for everything, not just hairstyle too. But the customer characterization in Veilguard, they allowed you to edit things and create your character to be uniquely your own, which I appreciated. Of course, that's what the customization menu does. But in this game specifically, it kind of had just more details about customization things that I thought was really interesting. So for instance, in the game, in the eye section, you can toggle your character to have heterochromia, which is a condition where a person has two different colored eyes. In a different section, you could design your character to have tattoos on their arms or their legs or their back or their chest, which might be in other games, I'm sure, but personally, I haven't seen it before. While you were making your character, what I thought was super helpful, especially, was that you can toggle the background to different lightings. So in the background, usually in a game, you're kind of, your character is just in one lighting, so you don't really know how they're going to look and when the sun is beaming down on their face or whatever. But in this game, I think it had 3 or 4 different options where you can toggle different lightings. So one was super bright because some of the game takes place in this like bright desert beach area. Another was a darker setting that it was just really helpful to see what your character looked like in different environments with shadows and lighting coming from above versus the side. It was just helpful. And again, something I haven't ever seen before in a game. It was really neat, and it did fuel my inner perfectionist. I also really appreciated that you can change your character's appearance within the game too. So that isn't something that's always, well, it's more days, nowadays it's becoming more of a thing where you get into a game and you can edit your character's customization. But a lot of times from what I've seen, that just in older games, especially, that isn't really a thing. Usually you make your character and that's it. They're like, you cannot edit your character from this point on. And, you know, the game's like 50+ hours long. And if you make a mistake, womp womp. Particularly in my instance, since I mess around with every little toggle that I can, I couldn't fix something on my character if she actually looked like a weird goblin because I forgot to change the nose's tips width or something like that. So, like I said, some games do allow you to change your character, but usually it's a lot later in the game. And usually it's a DLC, which is downloadable content, aka extra content that you have to pay for. And usually DLCs don't come out until a couple months after the game's release. So you kind of just stuck in this weird, if you want to play the game, you don't really know if you're going to be able to edit your character later. It's just, that's something that's, it's just a small bug that's always irritated me. And usually if a game allows you to edit your character later, you usually have to be like a certain level. So say like 20, level 20 or above. And in my mind, by that time, you've already suffered long enough with your goblin lady. And I just, ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
So usually it's just me stuck on this repetitive loop of, okay, I really like this character. I think she looks good. But then again, Goblin Nose. So then I have to restart and do the character. And it's just me just stuck on this loop, which is why I'm so like nitpicky about things and why I really dedicate my time to creating the creating my character in the customization menus, because I know most games you aren't going to be able to go back in. And again, ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
But in Veilguard, you could change your character anytime you wanted after the first mission. The first mission. No money within the game to be spent. No inconvenient fast traveling somewhere. No need to wait till level 20. I could do it whenever I wanted to, which was good. Because it turns out my character, bangs didn't look good on her. Not the look I was going for. So, really helpful. Something that I've always wanted to see in a game, but I haven't seen. At least if it's not, usually I'll see it, but it'll be like extra content. So I'm really glad that this was just in the base game, get it over with, allow people to mess around with the characters, which was nice. Okay, pro number three, your team. Now, there are some issues with this one that I'll get to in a bit, but for the most part, I was pretty happy with the team. I think the companions are a big part of why I love the Dragon Age franchise so much. BioWare and EA really put a lot of time and dedication into making the characters feel real. They banter, they have issues, they have drama, they grow, they make mistakes, all that good stuff, like a real person would. In this game, you can see how the threat and the impending doom of the antagonists, which in the game are Ghillanane and Elgrinnon, they're like these big elven gods that are basically destroying the world. You could see how those antagonists were affecting your team. And I will say, I had to put this in. If you've played the game, you know, you had to know, right? I really appreciated the characters of Asan and Manfred. Asan being a griffin and Manfred being a hissing skeleton. Because who knew that adding a pet griffin and a hissing skeleton would steal the show? Not me. But I loved them. They were my favorite. They were my favorite characters. And they weren't even humans. Humbling. I loved how the game encompassed team meetings throughout different points in the plot, too. That was something that I thought was pretty cool. So after every big, mean mission you did, the gang would all gather around the table and debrief, which I think was one of my favorite parts in the game, because you could see how the events and quests directly impacted the character's thoughts and feelings. So after a big mission, you know, you'd come and they'd sit around the table and then they argue about certain things and blame a character for doing this or blame a different companion for doing that. But over time, you got to see how they like were adults and dealt with issues. Anyway, it was just cool. And I liked how it showed that like passage of time. Speaking of passage of time, it was also really cool because in the game, your home base is called the Lighthouse. It's kind of like your safe haven. And every character, like all of your companions, have like a different room in the Lighthouse. And in those rooms, you can see how over time they add different things to the room. So different bits and baubles, different decor, stuff like that. That fit to the character. And I just thought that that was a really neat little detail. Okay. Pro number four were all the returning characters. Now, another thing about me is that I love a returning character. You hear me? In Dragon Age Veilguard? Oh yeah. It had a lot of returning characters, baby. We love to see Morrigan, the legend that she is. Has she been in all of them? I think she's been in all of them except Dragon Age 2, if I remember right. Varric, we love to see him. The staple, even though the ending of his character arc, it was a lot for CC. Damn, that was another moment where I was profusely crying my eyeballs out. But hey, you're not here to judge, right? Right. Another character that I thought I was like, Dorian, was Dorian Pavas. He showed up not... It was just, I think, one or two times, really. But he had me squealing and kicking my feet because he was one of my favorites. I don't think he was my favorite. Maybe he was. companions in Dragon Age Inquisition, aka the previous game to Dragon Age Veilguard. I just really liked his sarcastic banter. I think that it fits the environment. But of course, it being Dragon Age Veilguard, we would hope, and I was like 95% sure that the Inquisitor would come back, and she did. Woo-woo. We love to see her return. And I did have a freak out moment because I was really excited to see them there. So all in all, love to see the returning characters. Okay, we've done it. Now it is the time where I reveal my deepest, darkest secrets of Dragon Age Veilguard. And I'm going to get heated up talking about this because this is like the third time I've recorded this. And every time I'm like, Cece, you need to calm down. So I'll try, but no promises. So con number one was the combat, which is crazy. It's crazy to say, right? Because this game, RPGs, I mean, half of the game is combat, right? So combat is an issue here. That's a problem. It's a problem. That's a problem. Okay. So the combat. Why was it a pet peeve, Cece? Why did it really bug you and irritate you? Well, I'll tell you why. So I didn't notice just how much the combat bugged me until I got out of my hole of playing the game for 12 plus hours straight every day during my first playthrough. But the combat system kind of sucked. Okay, well, not the whole thing. Because the fighting, when I did fight, which I'll get to that in a sec, when I was fighting, it was fun. But the thing that irritated me the most was just the AI of the enemies. So the big thing that irritated me about the combat was how the enemies always, I mean always, I don't think you get it, I mean always, targeted your character. Freaking out. Okay, that might seem silly and not a big deal, but I'll explain. So, in previous Dragon Age games, you have your team that follows you around and helps you in combat. Usually it's like three or four characters, and this one it was just two. But you have different characters, and they all have different powers and abilities and tactics that help you fight the enemy. So you're able to upgrade their abilities as you upgrade your own character's abilities. This way, you can build your characters off of yours, which is really helpful. So for instance, I usually like to be in combat a little bit, but I don't want to be the main guy taking the damage. So usually, if I'm a mage, obviously a mage is the person that's like casting spells off in the distance. Sometimes you can build a mage character in, especially in Dragon Age Inquisition, I really like being a mage where you can like build up, I'm going to go into this and I don't need to, but basically you can build a mage to be sort of like a melee combat person, but doesn't have to be the main one. That one I found was fun. And say if I'm playing as like a rogue, you can be, usually if you're a rogue, you can either decide to be like a archer or you can be this like dual wielding stabby stabby person in the back. And rogues are cool because even if you're a bow guy, you can still do like a little bit of attacks if you're up close in a quarter. Anyway, but all in all is to say, in just a personal preference, I explicitly don't want the enemies targeting me. Because I don't have fun that way when I'm the main guy, because I don't like to be a tank because I think I'm just doing the same thing over and over again. But enemies targeting you isn't that big of a deal because obviously it's a game, it's a combat system, you know, there isn't anything crazy. But in Dragon Age Veilguard, or just Dragon Age games in general, the classes that you choose have just like stats that are built in them. And when you pick like a mage or a rogue, the stats that they have built in them aren't meant to survive that one-on-one enemy attacking you specifically. So in the instance of a mage and a rogue, their stats are usually boosted in other things. So with mages, their stats are usually boosted in mana, so you can cast spells. And then for rogues, usually it's like stamina or something called like dexterity, where you have just like critical chance, so you're able to really strike the enemy's weak points. So rogues and mages specifically don't have the endurance to survive all the enemies attacking them. Warriors are the other class, third class, and those are the ones that take damage and can handle it, because they have built-in health. So like I was saying, how mages have mana and rogues have dexterity or stamina. Warriors specifically have health. Like, that's their main buff. So warriors are designed for that one-on-one combat. They're meant for that kind of fighting. So usually when I'm playing the game, I'll always pick a class that isn't a warrior, aka not the tank, and I'll build my companions to be the tank. So in the perfect game scenario, I'll have a warrior or two in my party to draw the attention away and taunt enemies to go attack them instead. So the enemy's focus is on them. That way me and another supporting character or something can have fun at a distance. So the Dragon Age games, the combat system is meant to be strategic in a way that allows people to play the game how they want to. In Dragon Age Veilguard, however, they threw that idea in the trash and put it in the incinerator.
Bruh.
In this game, in Veilguard, when you are in combat, all of the enemies go towards you. Even when you have two other people in the party hitting you, even if one or both of them are warriors who are specifically taunting, aka getting the enemies to draw, just drawing them away from you. That is the whole point of a taunt. Even if you, and this one really got me, even if you adjust the settings in the menu of the game so that your character exudes the lowest aggression possible.
Are you kidding me?
It's like there's not even a point because their enemies don't give a rat's butt about that. They spawn in and boom, go right towards you. And that's a big problem for me, right? If you're getting what I'm putting down about the fact that I'm strategic and I'm trying to specifically not get enemies to attack me. It was just like the whole game. I was using my space more like it had bills to pay. At first, I was like, oh, this is fine. I'm dodging the attacks and I'm cool and I'm fast and blah, 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 blah. But man, it was like the game. It was like a game of cat and mouse the whole time. Where, picture this. You know, my character is running, the enemies are running after me, and then my companions are running after the enemies, running after me. And I couldn't, it was just so annoying because I couldn't even get a hit in because one strike would plummet my health down to critical, and you only have 3 health potions. So that's like what? You can only be hit 4 times and you're just dead? I would literally, every single time I'm in combat, I would literally just run around and wait for my companion's abilities to cool down and just use those. It was so annoying. I can't even like emphasize how annoying it was. In addition to that, which you'd be like, oh, Cece, that's not a big deal. It was. It is. It's a big deal to me. Because in addition, which wasn't a huge problem, it was more of a result of the developers doing this, and I don't know if they thought this through, but your companions in Dragon Age Veilguard couldn't die, which, you know, that seems great, right? But in previous games, so it's strategic, right? If you weren't watching your companion's health bar, so in the instance of me and another supporting character, you know, hitting enemies from a distance, and I have 2 guys that are drawing me attention, if I'm not watching those 2 warriors like health bar, if they don't have like health potions, or if I'm not having a mage casting a restoration spell on them, they're gonna die. And then the bad guys were coming after you. So you gotta use your noggin of how to have your team fight enemies without everyone dying. But in Veilguard, the companions never die. And as a result, I guess, at least in my mind, I think this is how they thought of it. Because Bioware and EA, I guess, thought if the companions would die, I think they knew that the combat system was screwed up, so they made the characters not die, but in essence, they basically made your companions useless. Because I think they thought that if the companions, which doesn't make any sense to me, but if the companions were able to actually, like, I don't know, deal damage like they're supposed to, people would just play through your companions and wouldn't play as your character. But it just doesn't make any sense, because what happened is that you have to do all the work. But there's a problem. Are you seeing what I'm putting down? Because how am I supposed to fight when I can't survive? Because all the enemies are aggroed onto me. angry sounds. You see the issue? So basically, the only people that will have a good time playing the game are people playing the warrior class, which I don't like playing as. For the rest of the classes, womp womp, guess what? You're literally going to be sprinting and dodging the whole game. I just found the combat system so difficult because of this, and I would literally avoid fights because I knew I would just be running around and away the whole time. Oh, and another fun thing. The developers decided to allow certain boss enemies, you know, the ones that are the hardest to defeat, have this really cool ability to, like, darken the room and just single you out. No character, no companions, just 1v1. And again, remember, I can't do anything if I'm just running around and dodging the whole time. It was a little irritating, to say the least. And when I was writing this, I was like, okay, Cece, you can't be going that crazy, right? Which is why I decided to do a second playthrough, which I was going to do anyway. But I decided to do it as a rogue. It was the first time I played it as a mage, and then the second time I played it as a rogue. And I was like, okay, mages really are just... I mean, they can't really do anything if you're not casting spells off from a distance. They're meant to be squishy. But rogues, you can purposefully, like, create your character to be in combat. So it's like, okay, maybe I'll try that, which was fun. But then I realized I really like using the bow. So then it was just like, Cece, we're just going down the same path as a mage. So it was just frustrating and annoying the whole time. Okay, con number two was the specialization tree. So this ties in with the combat system a bit in that once you reach high enough level, so in this case, I think it was level 20 in Veilguard, you're able to unlock a specialization that allows you to really hone in on how you want to play the game. So this is done. I think they have this in every Dragon Age game. So for instance, the first time I played Veilguard, like I said, I played as a mage, and there are three different specializations to choose from. So when you first start the game, you're able to kind of just build and take on perks to just, you know, up your stats or up your combination hits, stuff like that. But once you get to a certain high enough level, you're able to really pick a certain way to play the game. So the first part's really just level 1 through 20 or just you trying to experiment what you like best. But then once you get into higher up levels, you can really play how you particularly like to. So in the mage category, the three different specializations you could choose from were necromancy magic, which is like playing with dead. You could focus on melee attacks infused with magic, or you can choose to be like an elemental ice mage. All fun options, right? Sound really cool. Well, it's hard to feel like I have options when I can't really do anything to my enemies since I die all the time. Right? I feel like I had to choose the melee special the melee magic specialization to even do anything in the game. Because the whole time, most of the game, I've played the game just running around, trying to get a few hits in there and using my character's abilities and their powers and stuff to even play the game. So this whole time, I felt like I haven't been even playing the game. So while I could have chosen the elemental ice age or the necromancy, I knew it would just be me running around. So I chose a melee-infused magic because I was like, okay, at least I'll have a chance to play the game, right? So it was frustrating because usually the specialization tree, that's like my favorite part. That's where you're getting into the good stuff. That's where I can like, oh, you know, I really want to build my character to be a restorative magic girl, or I really want to focus on fire, or I really want to focus on ice, or I really want to focus on electricity. You couldn't do that. But I will say, this one wasn't as frustrating. I think it was just because I played the mage my first time. But when I played through the game again a second time as a rogue, it got a little bit better because in that one, at least in my brain, the rogue specialization tree had a lot more of a balance. So you could have more of like an offensive defenses kind of thing if you wanted to, or you could go full offense, you can go full defense. So you were able to like play with it a little bit more. So that helped it, but still, it was, even after choosing the specialization tree, because like I said, when I ended up playing as a rogue, I ended up liking the bow. So it was basically the same thing as a mage. I had to really just like decide, okay, I have to go with this specialization in order to really feel like I can defeat enemies, because it would have just been a lot more running around and dodging, and I'd already been doing that for half the game when I wanted to actually contribute to the fights. And I feel like, because this one's a con on the list, because I feel like I didn't have a choice in what was supposed to be the funnest part of building your character. Okay, con three was the music. And I feel so sad to put this on the con list, because I was so excited, because something that I discovered pretty recently before the game dropped and really tickled my brain was the game's music was done by Hans Zimmer. You know, the guy who did the music for movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, Gladiator, Interstellar, and Kung Fu Panda. Yeah, that guy. So I was pumped, thinking this would be a banger, a number one hit single. Well, really, because it's a soundtrack, but whatever. You know what? Another letdown. I shouldn't say that. But the music, it was fine. It just wasn't memorable. The only song that I really felt like I was like, okay, this song is fine, was the main theme, which I hope to God that was a banger. It was fine. It wasn't anything that stuck out. And then another song that I thought was pretty good was when one of your companion, Tasha's mother, that's like their like loyalty mission, where you really, they'll get like higher stats and stuff if you do the loyalty mission. Anyway, you're in this volcano, their mom dies, and the volcano is about to explode. So the mom dies and they're like holding their mom, crying. And it was just such sad music. Did I cry? Yes, I did. But the other moments of the game, which were a lot of really cool ones, I felt like I should remember the music, right? Because the music is just a really good tool for a game to really up the emotions. And I feel like I should remember the music, but I don't. Which is so strange, because in Dragon Age Origins and in Dragon Age Inquisition, those two specifically, they had a lot of bangers, you know? You have different environments playing different sounds, and it was just, like, I vividly remember so many of the other songs in the other games, but in this one, nothing. Nada. It felt like the music was just there to keep the game from being just dialogue or silence in the background, and it's not music, it's not what it should be doing, right? No hate, no shade, it just wasn't memorable to me, which it was just a big letdown, really. Okay, con number four was the story and the plot. I'm going through this, I'm like, CC, things that should be good in the game we're putting in the con? Crazy, right? The music is not very good. The combat's not very good. And then the plot's not very good. But I'll explain. So this one sort of has three parts to it too. But the one that particularly irritated me was basically everything that had to do with Solas. So Solas is the main, well, he's not the main antagonist. He is in the first part of the bit, and then he's locked in the Fade, and then he's not. And then, anyway, but in Dragon Age Inquisition, I really liked Solas. I thought he was a really cool character and was super interesting to talk to, and I did find him particularly useful in combat. And when I was playing Inquisition, when the ending credit scenes reveal him as the Dread Wolf, I was gobsmacked. I was like, hold on, I didn't just witness this tiny bald elf man is a god? Like, tiny bald elf. That's what he is, okay? That's what he looks like. So that was a really big part as to why I was excited for Veilguard, right? I was eager to see what BioWare and EA, where they took the story and where they went with it and all the things that they could do with it. I did like what they did. I just felt like the Solas that was in this game was a completely different character than the one we got to know in the previous game. And maybe that was a point, but it felt off to me. It felt like he didn't have any depth. I like that we got to learn more about his past and everything leading up to how he turned into a mortal from spirit, but I feel like they just skipped over everything that happened in the Inquisition, which granted, I get that, because in the Inquisition, he's posing as just this elf guy who was really good at knowing things that happened at the Fade because he explored, and that was his magical area of expertise. But at the end of the game, when you realize that he's the Dread Wolf, you know, it kind of explains things that happened, like certain bits where we were like, why is he holding the orb? And why did he bring us to Skyhold? Like things that you wouldn't think this random guy knew about. But, oh, Right. It turns out he's a god and he's done all of this. It felt like they didn't address all those things. And it was just strange to me because I felt like he was a completely different character than the one that we knew. And again, maybe that's the move because he is this different guy. He's a god that now has the power because he took it from Mathal. And it makes sense. It just felt weird. It felt like there's an elephant in the room where it was like, okay, you brought the Inquisitor back and you brought other characters that know and experience the time of Solas. And sure, it was mentioned, like Harding was one of the companions that you have in this game. And she was a character in Inquisition. She wasn't one of your companions, but you saw her a lot. And she talked about it a little bit, but even then it was like, it wasn't a part of the main story. And, you know, when you decide what to do with Solas at the end, you can decide to trick him, try to talk him in the truth, or you just have to like force him to basically save the world. And it's like, okay, you could do everything in the game to get him to talk to you, but it, like, they didn't, they were like, oh yeah, he's just this white, great, sweet guy. It's like, okay, but the main character in the game doesn't know that, you know? It felt like I knew it, right? Because I played the game, but the character, I don't know. It just felt weird. Maybe I'm just over-explaining it and it doesn't make any sense, but it felt strange to me and it was weird. The second thing that was annoying to me were the romances in the game. And this one's kind of like a niche thing, and this is what I meant with the companions earlier, but one of the big things that BioWare does in the game is that your character, the main character, can romance one of the companions from your team. And whoa, it's not like that. It's a cute, sweet progression. And it's like a little side story to the main story. And in this game, they completely ruin the romances. In earlier games, you could see your character and whoever you decided to romance have conversations, and you would see the progression of the relationship. So you can see them flirt, have their first kiss, have dates, admit their love to each other, all those parts of a relationship. You would have a bunch of cutscenes with your character and their partner. And it's just really cool because it's like the writers really put in a lot of work, their different quirks from the characters. And it's just cool to see more to the game. Like, you would completely miss out on a lot of content if you didn't romance a character, right? Not that you have to. It's just in my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to romance so-and-so. Because it's just cool to see the story and like what they do with it, and it adds more to the characters. And it's kind of funny because when I first played the game, I romanced Lucanus. And the whole time I was playing the game, you know, I talk to him every time I can and hit like the flirty dialogue and stuff, and just like nothing happened. The things that Rook, who was the main character, that you were playing, when they quote unquote flirted, it felt like it was just them being like a nice friend. You know, didn't feel like anything crazy. And when the game ended, there was maybe like two special cutscenes. And so I was like, there is no way. There was no way that was just it, right? Because in previous games, you would have over 10 plus different cutscenes, unique cutscenes between your character and that partner. It added a lot more to the story. So I was like, okay. I was looking it up. I was like, did I miss a quest or something that enabled him to have more cutscenes and stuff? It felt weird to me. And so it was just really funny when I figured it out, because if you look up YouTube videos of different romance characters in literally any game, in Origins, in Dragon Age 2, in Inquisition, the video is like 1-2 hours long, because that's just how much more content is added if you decide to romance a character. If you watch a video of a romance of any other character, it wasn't just me. I did do it right. If you watch a romance video of any of the characters in Veilguard, the videos are maybe 20 minutes long because they just didn't write in that much content. So, yep, major loss there. And that one isn't a big deal, right? Because I understand that they'd want to focus on more things, but the romances are really a lot, at least of what, because when I was looking up, I was like, there's no way this is what it is. And other people were like, yep, no, we were wondering the exact same thing, because this was just, it was expected, because that's what the past three games have done. And then they didn't do it on this one. So it was just a bit of a letdown. It wasn't anything crazy. It was just like, wow, something that I was looking forward to doing with the characters, because it added so much more lore and you got to know the characters better. They just cut that out. Okay. The third part about the story of Veilguard that irritated me were the allies. So this one isn't that big. I think it was more of just like, it felt like you were just there that happened to help, and then they fully trusted you. So in Veilguard, you were building up an alliance with six different groups to help aid you in your fight to defeat Gilanane and Elgaron. So some of the groups we have seen before, and some of them we haven't. In the game, you have the Wardens are an ally, which we've seen in all of the games, actually. The Crows returned, which I guess I say return. We learn a bit about them in Origins with Zevran. We have the Veil Jumpers. So the Crows and the Wardens, those are the ones that you've seen before. The other four were the Veil Jumpers, the Mourn Watchers, the Lords of Fortune, and then I can't remember the other one, but there's a sixth one. But I will admit, I think a lot of this is just me being excited and wanting them to go somewhere that I thought that they would and then they didn't, which is fine. I'm acknowledging that. But I think that it was just an opportunity for them to do something that they did in previous games that I thought worked out really well. And they just decided to go a different direction, which was fine. But in the instance of the groups that we haven't seen before, so like the Lords of Fortune and the Veil Jumpers, we just didn't get a lot of content from them. It felt like we, as a character, were expected to know as much about the other groups that we've seen before, like know their history and stuff, but they were just there. And I guess that makes sense because, you know, we're in a different area of the map. And of course, there are going to be things and groups that are big. Oh, the Shadow Dragons, that was the other one. To help defend and are just big allies in the area. Makes sense. But I think it was just the way that they did the quests, because in order to get the best ending, and I say best in quotes because it isn't really all that great of an ending, you have to like build up your alliance with them. So you have to trade with them. You have to do a bunch of these small quests to make sure that they trust you, and then you'll get the, again, quote, best ending. But the quests that you were doing didn't seem all that important. Like, if I was somebody that was like, okay, trying to test and see if this person I should trust, I feel like I would want them to do something really big and important for the group, like to actually help them. But in some of the quests, I was like, it just felt like it was just silly. You weren't really doing anything that wasn't all that important. Because for the Veil Jumpers, you were turning off this one artifact. Cool, great. How does that show my trust in you, you know? Or the crows, and I understood, because with Lucanus, it made sense with the grandmother being kidnapped and all of that stuff. But with like the Lords of Fortune, how was me fighting an arena gonna do anything? You know, it felt strange, and it felt like the quests that I was doing as Rook weren't actually important. And it didn't make sense that by me doing these quests would earn their trust. It kind of felt like this. Let's roleplay. So, can you go check on and find these people for us? Which we could totally do ourselves. And we're just sending you because you're right here. And then when you come back, oh my gosh, really? I didn't think you'd find them. Thank you so much. They weren't really all that important. They were kind of just scouts. But now that you have my full support and you have full access to all of our warriors to help you fight these big bad guys that we've never heard of before, and we don't really know if you're actually telling the truth in the final battle just because you did this one thing for us. Blink, blink. Blink, blink. Okay, thanks, I suppose. It just felt like a lack of importance. It felt like you as Rook and the companions were like, yeah, this could be the end of the world. And the guys are like, okay, go find my spoon. It just didn't make sense to me. So basically, to sum up this whole podcast, I just wanted more. And I just wanted it to meet my expectations, and it didn't, which is okay, because I understood they went in a different direction. I think it was just like, they've done so well in the past couple of years to really be something unique and to do something that people haven't done before. And with this one, there were a lot of things that they did well, but not the things that I guess I consider important. So overall, I guess I just have a mixed review. When going back, I'll be like, wow, you mentioned a lot of cons and you really talked about that. But overall, I would definitely recommend playing the game, but I would warn those who have played other Dragon Age games before to not have that high of expectations, because the game might or probably isn't going to meet them. And that might seem harsh, but it's the truth. BioWare and EA, aka the developers, have a lot to live up to. And in some ways they crushed it, but in others it lacked. And I think that says a lot about the talent of the companies, actually. Because if you're able to create a world where people are able to totally immerse themselves in stories, in the characters, and believe in the things that they believe, that says a lot about your ability to create, to design, to connect, to consistently create games that people rave about for years later. It's no easy feat. Sometimes that last chapter isn't what you may want, but that doesn't mean that the game is bad. It just means that there's room for improvement. And hopefully they'll decide to do another edition of Dragon Age. With the way that it ended, it sort of felt like a wrap on things, and that's fine. You know, I'm not going to be a hater of Dragon Age Inquisition, or not Inquisition. I'm not going to be a hater of the Dragon Age franchise just because of this one game, you know? Just because it didn't meet my expectations doesn't mean that it's a bad game. It was pretty good. How contemplative of me. How very astute of me to come to that conclusion. Not really. Now, as always, Fireside Aces Radio is produced by Student Media. Student Media is a student organization at the University of Evansville. Student Media produces the Crescent magazine, published online and in print 3 times a semester. Student Media produces several podcasts and utilizes design, photography, video, and sound towards experiential and academic learning in journalistic endeavors and engaging storytelling. Student Media elevates the voice of the student body and connects the campus and community to important information and points of view. Well, that's it for this one, folks. Happy year 2025, even though it's literally the end of January. I wish you a most pleasant day. This is your host, Cece, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Ta-ta!